I'm Richard Wright of Pink Floyd, inviting you to join Redbeard.
With all of its success of Momentary Lapse of Reason, with all of that remarkable tour success, after I've only lived with this now 24 hours. I've had a chance to hear it. I've had a chance to hear it.
Right.
Twice.
Mm-hmm.
Twice through. I think that your fans are going to find this to be even a more satisfying album than Momentary Lapse.
I think that is absolutely correct.
Why do you think?
Well, partly because I was involved with it a lot more. And we made certain decisions. For example, Momentary Lapse of Reason, I was involved with it virtually near the sort of the last quarter of making the album, and just putting in a couple of Hammond tracks down or whatever. This, Nick, myself and Dave were involved right from the beginning in Britannia Row, just playing together. And out of that, the tracks came. And decisions like Nick will play all the drums, I will play all the keyboards, and John Caron came in as a programmer and played some of the keyboards, but it was to get the band feeling back. And for that reason, I think, as you say, the fans will like it more. I think we're kind of thinking of Wish You Were Here, which happens to be my favourite album.
You and David Ball?
Absolutely, yeah.
Why do you think that is? What aspects?
Because it's the best album we've done.
Tell me what, in your opinion, makes that one special, and any parallels that you see to the Division Bell?
Now, that's a specific question. It's hard to say. It just happens to be the album that, for me, just from the moment it starts till it finishes, it flows. The songs flow into each other, and it's just a wonderful feeling in it.
This album, The Division Bell,
yeah,
flows seamlessly from song to song.
I have to tell you the truth here. I've actually, because I've been involved with it for a year, and I've worked on it, and you work on piece by piece by piece. And I've actually probably heard it as many times as you, maybe twice.
In toto.
In toto, right. Okay, and I was listening again today. So I got a DAT of the album 2 weeks ago, and I listened to it in my headphones before I went to sleep. And then we've been so busy, I haven't had a time to sit down and listen to it. And I was listening to it again today. So I can't actually judge the album overall. I haven't actually listened to it from the beginning. I have listened to it, you know what I mean? But I haven't really sat down one night with no other thoughts in my mind and listened to it. Haven't had the time.
Are you looking forward to that moment?
Yes, yeah.
And I think that is telling, a very telling statement right there, because so often when it comes to art, the way the modern recording process is, the modern studio and deadlines and things like that, you can become so obsessed with quality and standards, mm-hmm, and deadlines, mm-hmm, that when you're done with it, you never want to hear it again.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, this one was just, we gave ourselves so much time to make the album, and we started in January 93, and we got to the mixing stage, and we allowed ourselves, I don't know what it was, 4 weeks of mixing. It came down to 3 weeks, and then in the middle of the mixing period, Dave had to stay carrying on mixing the album. I had to then go over with Nick and start rehearsing for this tour. So at the beginning, I was part of the mixing process, just listening, giving ideas, suggestions, and whatever. And then I had to leave halfway through in the mixing to go and start rehearsing. And we had to rehearse without Dave. So it was very, very tight. So I was curious to know how it was going to be put together, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
I knew each track, but I didn't know how it was going to be put together.
Mm.
So I can't tell you right now completely what I feel about how it's been put together.
That's fair. That's a fair statement. I'm sure it's very true.
It's just an amazing amount of, you know, pressure at the moment,
yeah,
to get this tour going as well.
Now,
but overall, I'm very happy with it, of course, and I'm happy with it because I was involved with it.
And we'll talk more about that in just a second. You mentioned pressure, the self-imposed deadlines happened because of a tour, the size of this tour. These dates are rather immovable dates.
Yes.
Do you think that had not these drop deadlines been held fast, do you think that, in other words, where is the balance between the self-imposed pressure to create up to your standards and the pressure to complete?
Well, I think the truth is that we had enough time. We gave ourselves plenty of time to make an album. We gave ourselves a year to make an album. And we knew a year ago when the tour was starting. Okay? So we had enough time, but we took it very easy.
What's the hardest?
So we are responsible. Okay. We had us. It's not like we had, my God, 2 months to make an album and 1 month to rehearse. And it wasn't like that. We had a whole year to do the album, get the tour together. It was just, it's our fault.
What's the hardest part about it? Is it starting or stopping?
Is it starting an album?
Or stopping, which is harder?
It's hard to start. But what we did, we'd never done it. Well, we have done it before, but what we did this time, we actually had 4 90-minute dats, I think, or 5 or 6 90-minute dats of music. And the hardest thing was to throw things out and decide what we're going to work on. So we had maybe 30 or 40 pieces of music, and we worked on most of those, and then having to drop things we all love, not knowing how the album's going to turn out anyway. And for example, there are pieces that we dropped that I believe should be in the album now, but we had dropped because we didn't have any clear idea how the album would be. But they were, you know.
Are they? But they're not lost forever.
They're not lost, no.
Right.
They're in my head. They're in Dave's head. They will go onto our solo albums. They will go onto another Pink Floyd album or whatever.
Yeah. That's what tape's for, right?
They're not lost.
That's good. That's good. They're not lost.
So, yes, it's hard. It wasn't hard to start in the rehearsal rooms. We just went in there and played with no, I mean, just whatever we wanted to do, whatever we felt like. And that was great.
Now, that's a considerable change.
Then, to come into a studio with 3 hours of music, 4 hours of music, whatever it may be, and then try and decide, okay, where do we go from here? And we spent a long time going nowhere, trying things out.
And what do you think? It's been...
You know, you're asking, I mean, then it is very hard to stop, but you have to stop. And whenever you stop, you want to carry on and get it better.
What is it about now, the dynamic between you and David and Nick and Bob Ezrin? What is it that made this album, The Division Bell, start differently than the last 5 Pink Floyd studio albums have?
Well, as I said, the intention of this album was to try and recreate a band feeling, which hadn't happened on Momentary Lapse of Reason. I wasn't on Final Cut. I was on The Wall, but again, it wasn't a band thing. And we wanted both Dave and Nick, I can speak for them, I think, and myself, really liked the feeling we had on Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here. After that, we lost that band feeling. And the original intention, actually, this album was to learn all the material and then get the other musicians, Gary, John, Guy, girl singers, and go and play it live in the studio. That didn't turn out that way. But that was the original intention of Dave's, was actually to basically do a live album in the studio.
I'm wondering about what I'm calling, for lack of a better term, Pink Floyd hallmarks. The consistency, the standards that Pink Floyd has imposed upon itself and yourselves over the years. The linearity of Pink Floyd albums for nigh on 25 years now. And something I call loyalty. I find these to be fascinating hallmarks and not too prevalent in popular music and certainly in the entertainment business. First of all, let's talk about consistency. How important is that to Pink Floyd success, Pink Floyd's standards?
Consistency. Well, it hasn't been consistent, as you know. I actually left the band after the war in 81 and came back, Emotion, That's the Reason, in the record a little bit, and then did the tour. But I think we rediscovered the band, if you like. Consistency. I mean, whenever we go out and do it, a tour, we kind of want to make it better than the last one. And this one, lighting-wise and design-wise, I have to say, is incredible. It really is. I mean, knocked me out when I saw it, you know. When I first went into the hangar to see the setup, it's unbelievable.
Now, does it have to do that for you before you feel confident?
No, I'd love to play in very small arenas, and no.
But what about the standard? I mean, it certainly would be easier.
But we kind of created it. I mean, I'm sure
yes,
all the
did.
People are coming to see us. Okay.
Yes, you did.
Okay, Pink Floyd, top what you did last time.
That's exactly right.
And if we didn't, if we went and said, let's do a... Which would be nice. Let's go and do, not a big tour. Let's just go out and do, a tour, not only cheap, but, a small arenas, let's say, if we want to do it. Let's play in very small gigs or whatever. A lot of people possibly would be disappointed. Because we have built up, as you say, 25 years, right from the first go. Lights.
Oh, yeah.
And not individuals. We've never been, sold as individuals of the band. So each time, yes, I guess, where do you go from here? And we do generally believe that if you put on a show outdoors, you really should make an effort to make it the best thing people have seen. Because I tell you, I have to say, it's not much fun sitting in a stadium and a band putting on a pretty mediocre show.
Oh, no.
It's
no,
poor,
it's not.
They're sitting there for 6 hours, and they want to see something spectacular.
Yeah.
Pink Floyd, they know, will see something spectacular. So they deserve it,
Right.
Our fans, if you like, anyone, they deserve to see something better than the last time. Richard Wright of Pink Floyd, here with Redbeard.
When you left, was there any possibility in your mind then that you could be sitting in March 1994, having done what you just did and about to do what you're about to do?
The simple answer to that, and I have to keep it simple, is no, there wasn't.
Why?
Right? Why?
Yeah.
Oh, because I just thought the whole band was breaking up anyway. I mean, we don't have to get into the Roger situation and all
no.
that, then, because everyone,
no,
knows, everyone knows about that.
Yeah, I'm interested in you.
Yeah, right. And so I thought, no. I just thought that was it, and I would go ahead and do other things or whatever. Because I had a feeling the band was going to break up, and with Final Cut, I mean, it was breaking up and did break up.
Sure did.
And the big thing was that Dave and Nick then sat down and said, when we're going to carry on, which, the stories, we don't have to go through it. And but actually in 81, when I finished the last Wall concert, in my mind, I was probably thinking, no, that's it.
Because of the unique perspective you have on this, because of the way you've done it, is the division bell particularly sweet for you personally?
Sweet. How do you mean sweet?
In fulfilling?
It was fulfilling because I wrote on it. And I wrote with Dave on it. And I sang on it for the first time a lead vocal since Dark Side of the Moon. So that was very fulfilling.
Good.
Because, you see, I have to say, I've never, ever had any confidence in my voice. But I wrote this song, Wearing the Inside Out. And so I had to sing it. And it was quite interesting because I haven't really sung. And went in and did a track of singing it. I'd rehearsed it with Anthony Moore, who wrote the lyrics, but I basically hadn't really sung for 20 years. And did one take, and Bob Ezrin said, OK, that's it, which I couldn't believe. And went in and listened to it, and I said, yes, it is nearly it. And we worked on it a bit. But it's a song that really suits my voice. I don't have a versatile voice, OK? I'm not a Dave. There are certain ways of singing I can do, like the choruses of Time, Us and Them, or the chorus of Time. I have a voice that can do certain ways of singing, and Wearing the Inside Out, because I wrote it, would suit my voice. I couldn't sing Money, for example. But that was very fulfilling, particularly, writing a song and singing it and having it on the album.
There is an element of Pink Floyd that I hadn't noticed been missing, really, over time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you've underlined it by singing this song. It's like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's very much a part a part of the Pink Floyd sound.
Yeah. And the element, another element, is, for example, What You Want From Me, which is, well, I mean, I wrote the intro track. And then What Do You Want From Me? It's this kind of combination of Dave and me writing it musically. And he wrote the lyrics and everything. But that sounds to me so Pink Floyd. And that comes from Dave and me. And that wasn't happening on Mopeshatch Reason, wasn't happening on Final Cut, obviously, because I wasn't there, wasn't happening on The Wall. So those things that are happening on the album are wonderful. And I think, as you say, a lot of people are going to love it for that.
There is something about, back to your vocal on Wearing the Inside Out, there's something about it that makes it sound to me like you nailed it on one of the first takes, and you're telling me it was the first
take? It was the first take.
That's remarkable. I was wondering how many times you were prepared.
I was prepared to do it a lot of times, but I was... I've always had a feeling about my voice. I don't believe I'm a singer, but I do believe I can sing certain things. And because, as I say, I wrote it, and, okay, we've got to do the singing. We'll do the vocals tomorrow, Rick, right? And I said... Said to Dave, well, look, I'm really not confident about this. And then I was driving to the studio and I said, I'm going to do it. I'll just sing it however I feel like. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter.
It's only tape.
You know, I'm not a singer. I've got nothing to lose.
That's an excellent attitude. That's why you nailed it the first time.
And that's why it happened.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. But if it sounds like that, that's very good. If it sounds like... this is a first take. What everyone wants when you sing.
It sounds like you walked in the room, told us, sang what was on your mind and in your heart, even though it was, you know, you said they were somebody else's lyrics. It's still, well, you made them your own.
They were lyrics. I mean, there were other person's lyrics, Anthony Moore's lyrics, but they were written lyrics that I worked with him. He came down, I mean, we worked on the lyrics and the song for quite a while. And the lyrics I think they're great lyrics.
They are.
They're, you know, very good.
You have in your vocal presentation on Wearing the Inside Out kind of an everyman vulnerability to it that I found very appealing.
Right. Well, I'm glad if that comes across, that's great, because that's what the lyrics are about. It is about a person being vulnerable. I mean, these lyrics aren't expressing how I feel. But that is the whole point of the song. It is about, shall I let the people work the meaning out for themselves? Shall I be a Dave? No, but the song is basically about... sorry, Dave. you can cut that one out. It is about vulnerability. It's about a guy who's being overloaded with information and crap from television. And so he withdraws within himself. He can't take it anymore.
Tell me about Marooned. It's just achingly beautiful.
I'm curious about how... I mean, I love it, because, again, I wrote it with Dave. But I'm curious to know how it will go. I mean, we're talking about the time, right? And that was the first one that was mixed. And for me, it hasn't been mixed properly. I still like it, and I think it's a good mix. But... I wish we could have had time to go back and remix it. However, I'm curious to know if they do play it on radio, will they play it on radio?
I think I will.
I hope you do. Right.
Because it's...
Yeah, I mean, the guitar work on it is incredible.
It's so evocative. I don't know how the human voice could be more evocative, more soulful. He really...
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Overall, I mean, I believe I counted up at least 5 songs here that you've contributed to.
It's 5, yeah.
Yeah. How does that change the way you look at Pink Floyd now than from even as recently as the Momentary Lapse tour?
I'm very excited. Because the last writing I did was Wish You Were Here. Because I didn't write on the wall. Mm-hmm. You have to remind me. What came after Wish You Were Here? Animals. I didn't write on Animals.
Right.
Nor the wall. I wasn't with the final cut. So my last writing was on Wish You Were Here. And now my writing is on this album. Mm. And in the future, it'd be interesting to see how the albums are and how the people react to the albums.
I think
because I've already heard some people saying to me, this album's wonderful because it goes back to Wish You Were Here. It doesn't go... it has a feeling of Wish You Were Here.
I agree.
Yep.
What was it like recording on a floating houseboat?
Wonderful.
It's rather rather intimate, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not a big facility.
No.
No.
No, no. It's very, very small. But it's great there. In fact, funny enough, we then went to Olympic Studios to do the drum tracks and things. And came back to the Astoria. And we noticed the drums sounded much better in this tiny little room at the end of the boathouse. And they did an Olympic. So we did everything, basically everything in Astoria. Anything we did outside Astoria was keyboards and grand pianos.
Hmm.
So the whole thing was done really in Astoria. And I think we got one of the best drum sounds we've ever had. And that came from a little room on his boat.
Amazing.
Hmm. And thanks to Andy Jackson.
Yeah. Sound is a funny...
and Bob.
Sound's a funny thing, isn't it? It doesn't necessarily come out logical, whatever works.
It doesn't.
No. How would you sum up your feelings at the end of the Momentary Lapse tour? I mean, it was so successful, the scale of which, the number of dates, just the pure, the box office. What was the feeling when you came... at the conclusion of the Momentary Lapse tour, what was said, what was left unsaid about the future?
I don't think there was any clear idea of the future, except that everyone realized the band had started happening again. And there was a lot of sadness.
Why? What kind of
sadness? End of the tour.
Oh. Parting?
And that last tour had a wonderful feeling to it that we hadn't had for years, because I've done every Pink Floyd tour, and certainly for me, I have probably the best feeling of the band being together since the beginning, virtually. So I knew it was going to happen again. There was no way that after the feeling that we had on that tour that Dave or Nick would say, not again.
And so does that give you great anticipation for...
future. Well, we're getting older. No, but what the album's done, and hopefully this tour done, has kind of inspired me to do a lot of things.
That's good. That's wonderful. That's.
I already have 2 projects going, which I won't talk about, but...
But you do have...
Because of doing this album. Because I know the next Pink Floyd album will be a few years. Or maybe it won't. Maybe we'll go straight into the studio and do another one. But, But having done this, I've got quite a lot of things to do musically.
So it's been invigorating for you.
Mm-hmm.
You personally and your career.
I may feel differently at the end of this tour because we haven't started yet. No, it's not true. I mean, whatever happens on this tour, I'm very excited about it.